This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the CCWG Accountability Workstream 2 Jurisdiction Subgroup Meeting number 44 on August the 30th, 2017 at 1300 UTC. Welcome, everybody. First, I'd like to welcome everyone. Secondly, we have in front of us the agenda, so we will move to the second item, which is the review of the agenda, which I have not updated in text, but we'll update as we discuss it. First, we have our obligatory administrative minute. After that, we have a discussion of the issues. We will review the proposed issues list, discuss the process for ordering and considering ordering issues and then considering them. We have an issue that we decided to tee up last week for this week's call, which is the choice of law for registry and registrar agreements. And also, we have the first draft of the OFAC recommendation, which should be added here for discussion under item 4. Then we have AOB, and finally, we'll adjourn. So that is the agenda. I'll call now to see if anyone has anything they'd like to put in the AOB slot, not to be discussed now, but just mentioned. Of course, it can be mentioned at a time as well. Seeing nothing, no current nominations for AOB, we'll, of course, look again when we get to that point in the agenda or in the meeting itself. So let us go back to number 3 for administration. First, I'll ask if there are any changes or updates to statements of interest. Seeing none, I'll ask if anybody is on the audio bridge only. I'm not hearing anyone identify themselves as being on the audio bridge. We do
have Brian Scarpelli, sorry.
Oh, good morning, Brian.
Hi.
Thank you. Anyone else on the audio bridge? Okay. We have, looks like, two phone numbers that we need to attach to people. So if you are the number ending in 1446, that has now changed to Brian Scarpelli. Looks like we have 5316. Who is 703-518-5316?
Greg, that's me, Phil Corwin.
Okay, thank you, Phil. That takes care of our numbers. Similar to the DNS, there may be numbers underlying our names, but we use the names. So that takes us through item 3 and directly into the issues. So if I could ask staff to put the proposed issues list up on the screen. Pause a second here. Here we have it. So this is a list that staff and myself, and by staff, I have to give a big tip of the hat to Bernie Turcotte. We reviewed the list, the email list, and the conversations and the Google Doc, and tried to pull out every issue that had been raised in this final call for issues so that we can get them all in one place. So what we need to do first is to make sure that we didn't miss anything. So really this is kind of a census. That's kind of the first order of business. Caboose, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all of you. I just seek your advice whether you did kindly take into account my suggestions 2 meetings ago that when you received a list of issue, perhaps if you could find some time, go through them in a cluster to see whether they are overlapping, whether the number should be reduced in a way that they are addressed in a different way, but the context is the same. So this is the question. I'm sorry I was unable to attend your last meeting, and I have not gone through this list of issues to suggest you something, but I want to just know whether you had any possibility to do that. I know you have been very busy, and we thank you very, very much for that. But just a question, whether, first of all, you agree with that notion, and second, whether you have done it or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose, and thank you for bringing up your suggestion. As a matter of fact, we did do this. You'll see that the left-hand column is major topics, and then the second column is individual proposed issues. So we did, in fact, try to group things into major topics and overlapping topics so that we could relate them. Also, in the notes column, we indicated where there were additional overlaps or relationships. We did not do this in a completely scientific manner yet. This is, you know, should be considered a first draft, if you will, or at least a working draft. I don't want to overemphasize this document as something that we're going to polish, but the point here is to make sure that we got everything out, and we did take up that very helpful suggestion and try to group things under kind of major topic heading, as reflected in the left-hand most column. So I'd like to see, I believe Jorge Concio sent an email to the list a few hours ago, overnight for me in New York, indicating a few things that appeared to either be missing or perhaps not expressed clearly enough. I haven't had a chance to respond. I think most of those are here, but in any case, we'll turn to that and respond and update the list as necessary. So I'd like to see from everybody else in the room if there are either any issues that it appears we didn't get into the list, or if they are on the list, it's not clear how they're expressed, that you can't quite see the issue here. Again, these are kind of rough titles. They're not intended to be final expressions of the issue per se, although I hope they've been expressed in a clear fashion. So I see again Caboose. Your hand's up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, maybe it is not under this list, but I had a look at the recommendations and so on and so forth. If you come to that at a later stage, I will limit myself to that time, but not taking any action now. So just tell me that, do we have any opportunity to go to this first draft today or not? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Caboose. So what I'd like to do is to go through this list briefly, not read the whole thing, because that would take too long. to take a look at the major topics and make sure that we seem to have covered everything. Of course, we'll want to have comments on the list. Welcome, Tiago. This will be continue to be used and refined. But I think this is far more manageable as than the Google sheet that had many, many columns to it. So the first set of major topics falls under OFAC. And I believe this is where what you're referring to resides. And we have several issues under OFAC. Kuvus, I'm not sure if that's a new hand or an old hand. If it's a new hand, please go ahead. Not hearing Kuvus. I'll assume it's an old hand or that he'll come back to us.
Okay.
So there are several
mute on to not to disturb anybody. Yes, in several emails, I mentioned that the need for a distinction between the U.S. national registrant based in U.S. and U.S. national registrant based in non-U.S. countries. It may be different or might have different treatment. This is very important. There might be registrar that are U.S. nationals, but they are not based in U.S. So I want to address that, whether the OFAC applies to them or not, because I read the OFAC and I have the impression that they're usually talking about U.S. nationals. So, and U.S. residents. So this is two issues together. There's a combination of that, a combinaison in French, that U.S. national, not U.S. based, U.S. national, U.S. based. Thank you.
Thank you, Kuvus. I see a hand from Bernie Turcotte. Please, Bernie, please go ahead.
Thank you, Kuvus. Having gone over the transcripts from our 1st of August meeting, relative to Sam Eisner's answers on this, I'll simply channel her on this. OFAC applies to Americans. That's not a question. It can also apply to non-Americans if they do a significant amount of business in the U.S. And I believe, as Sam has said, for registrars, ICANN cannot, and we discussed, and sorry you weren't there last week, I believe we touched on this last week, because ICANN cannot provide legal advice to registrars as to if they are meeting or not their obligations under OFAC. That's for each registrar to decide. It's just simply impossible to do otherwise. I hope that helps. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Bernie. And I think just to one more point on the point of fact, it is my understanding that OFAC requirements extend not only to U.S. nationals, to the U.S. operations of U.S. nationals, but to any, to affiliated operations, by which I mean those under common control and ownership with the U.S. Entity, so that a foreign subsidiary of a U.S. company would also, may also have applicability of OFAC sanctions, and a U.S. division or business unit that is located abroad that is part of the same company, I believe is likely. This is not a legal opinion, but just my understanding of the facts as I know them, that that foreign office would also need to comply with OFAC regulations. So I see a couple of comments in the chat. Farzana says, first we discussed this issue and provided a possible solution. Farzana follows up, when will we discuss the solutions? That'll be in the a couple of topics down. This is right now just a census of the issues, but we'll get to that with regard to OFAC in this meeting. I see a question from Wale. Are you referring to U.S. registrants operating outside U.S. but based in the U.S.? That is often the case, though, with TLD services. I think in this case we're referring to registrars and not to registrants, as I understand it. Caboose, if that's a new hand,
yes,
please go ahead.
I think this brings us to the issue that we discussed, and according to Thomas Rupert, he proposed something and so on and so forth. I think having a commercial, or not commercial, having a connection of operation with ICANN should not be a reason for application of OFAC. We should not be impacted by ICANN being an incorporation in the U.S. And under the U.S. law, and in that applies. So I don't understand what does it mean, because in some of the recommendations, you also address that issue, that it doesn't seem to be logical that having some connection, everyone in Internet has connection with ICANN. So I don't think that we should do this one, and that brings us back to the chicken and egg. We decided by consensus, I don't know what type of consensus, but that is that we don't come back to the place of incorporation and the applicable law, provided that does not have any impact. And I see that now Bernie refers to some statement saying that because they have some operational connection with ICANN, OFAC applies automatically. I am not convinced to that. Otherwise, we come back to the issue of place of ICANN. That is not quite satisfactory, this solution. We should resolve that issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I'm not sure that I heard what Bernie said much differently than you did. So I think we need a clarification. It looks like Bernie's hand is up, so I will give you the floor.
Thank you, Greg. Yes, that is correct, Greg. That is not what I said, Caboose. I said that businesses that are not American-based businesses, if they do a significant amount of business in the U.S., has nothing to do with if they have a contract with ICANN. If they do a significant amount of business in the U.S., they may be subject to OFAC by OFAC rules. And it's for each registrar to decide that. It's not for ICANN to advise them on this. It's simply impossible. So it has nothing to do with the fact that they are an ICANN-accredited registrar. It has to do with how much business they do in the U.S. That I hope that clarifies. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. And one additional note, it's not that a company has a contractual relationship with the U.S. entity that subjects them to OFAC. Otherwise, any company in the world that had a contract with a U.S. entity would be covered by OFAC, and that this doesn't work that way. When we're referring to subsidiaries and affiliates, we're referring to ownership relationships, part of the same conglomerate or combination, and not to third-party relationships through contract. In any case, the last point, of course, is that what registrars think they're supposed to do to comply with any law of any type is up to them, as it is. So we can offer clarification, perhaps, but cannot instruct them on legal advice or on their relationship to their customers. Tiago, see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Tiago speaking for the record. I think I asked a question that touched upon one of these points in the previous call. And the question was whether OFAC sanctions applied to U.S. nationals, entities, and individuals, as opposed to any entity that does business in the United States. I think I asked this question and Bernie took note of that, and normally he would have asked Sam to provide a clarification in relation to that point. I'm not sure whether the clarification has been provided, but I think that I think it might be relevant, the comment that I'm about to make. And one thing is OFAC sanctions whose applications are limited to U.S. nationals but may eventually and incidentally apply to any other entity that is based outside the United States because it is entering into contractual relationships with a U.S. Based entity that is subject to OFAC sanctions. So I understand I might have not been as clear as I could have been, but I think it's important to have clear whether OFAC sanctions apply to U.S. nationals only, and because of that, because those entities that are based in the United States have business with entities outside the United States, because there is these sort of contractual relationships between one entity that is subject to OFAC sanctions. Because of that, sanctions that are not does not have the U.S. nationality, they might be subject as well to OFAC sanctions, but only incidentally. I think it's important to have this very clear to understand that the particular situation of ICANN being a U.S.-based entity, it is because of that that the OFAC sanctions regime has a particular importance to our work. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiago. I think I actually answered that question in what I was saying just before you talked, but Bernie has his hand up, so I'll go to Bernie and then come back briefly. Bernie, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Referring to Sam, I did distribute last week her officially corrected version of the transcript from the August 1st call where she present OFAC, where she took great pain to ensure that her answers and her all of her statements were properly recorded in that version of the transcript. And I believe that if you go through that, you will find most of the answers you're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. And just to clarify, my understanding, of course, we can go back and clarify this further, but my understanding is that merely having a contractual relationship with the U.S. entity does not subject that contracting party to OFAC sanctions if that other party is a non-U.S. party. It's being part of the same enterprise. Now, there are obviously nuances to this. But we can get to that further. And I think it would make sense to continue the discussion of OFAC, not while we're looking at the general census, but when we look at the OFAC recommendation, which I'd like to get to shortly. So let's move past the OFAC row on this sheet, and we can take further discussion of this aspect of OFAC reach to the list for further clarification. So after the OFAC issue or major topic set, the next major topic set is provisions relating to choice of law in certain ICANN agreements, specifically that the registry and registrar agreements don't have a provision stating the governing law of the agreement. Also, that there is a lack of choice in the potential arbitration body and the jurisdiction of arbitration in ICANN agreements, and also the concern raised that the lack of governing law provisions could lead to courts more likely choosing their own law as the governing law of the contract. So if there's nothing major missing under that topic heading, we'll just move on. First, I see a hand from Parminder, though. Parminder, please go ahead.
Thank you, Greg. Parminder here for the record. I actually raised the hand while we were still at OFAC, and if you permit, may I ask a question about OFAC?
Well, I would prefer to talk about OFAC Hello. Under the OFAC discussion, but if you want to do it now, go ahead.
Oh, I just want to put on record the question I put on mail, which I wanted a response to. If somebody can do it now, it's okay. But if it can be given on email, that is as well. The question was whether there are general license possibilities across all regimes or for every sanction order there is a general license, which I understand is the latter is the case, but I wanted a clarification. And I don't have a problem. That's not super urgent. We can do it later, but I just wanted to put it on record. Thanks.
Thank you, Parminder. We'll note that, and it's probably best to get to that in the OFAC specific discussion coming up. So the if there's nothing anyone wants to add, or believe was missed, rather, in this major topic, and we'll move on to the next major topic, U.S. court jurisdiction over ICANN activities. First proposed issue was that jurisdiction over ICANN activities that comply with GAC advice or are otherwise based on powers recognized onto governmental authorities according to U.S. Bylaws, and that this is an issue. I think we need to clarify what is meant by based on powers recognized onto governmental authorities according to ICANN bylaws. It's just, for some reason, that's not scanning to me. In other words, I just don't understand what it's quite exactly what that refers to. Parminder, is that a new hand? Old hand, I see. David McCauley suggests that should we note other national courts' jurisdiction over ICANN in this line item? David, I think that has you're correct. That has been raised in the in our discussions of this issue, and I will ask if others have any comment on this suggestion. Something that should be raised here, but it, I do agree it seems reasonable, at least as a proposed issue. So we'll note that. I see a hand from Tiago. Tiago, please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Tiago speaking for the record. I think there is something missing in the recollection of what is at stake in this issue. And what is missing, to my understanding, is that U.S. jurisdiction over ICANN activities is problematic, mainly to the extent that U.S. Jurisdiction has, that the United States has exclusive enforcement jurisdiction. So on one hand, there is the possibility that U.S. courts exercise jurisdiction over certain ICANN activities, but this exercise of prescriptive jurisdiction, which is the jurisdiction exercised by courts, is generally followed by the enforcement or execution of court sentences or exercise of enforcement powers that might be in pursuance of a court decision, right? And the peculiarity here in relation to U.S. jurisdiction is that only the United States, because ICANN is situated within the territory of the United States. Only the United States has the necessary powers to enforce court sentences and legislative and other sorts of normative prescriptions. So I think it is important to flesh it out there on the table, that the problem of U.S. courts having jurisdiction over ICANN activities is also linked to the fact that the United States has exclusive enforcement jurisdiction, which flows from its territorial sovereignty over ICANN. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiago, for your opinion. See a note from David McCauley. I think we might need proof about exclusive enforcement jurisdiction, perhaps a legal question to pose. First, I think as a factual statement, I'm not sure that that's accurate. First, ICANN can be sued in other jurisdictions other than the United States, at least where it has physical operations. So that's, in terms of exclusive jurisdiction, not correct. Secondly, in terms of enforcement, in terms of civil cases, the judgment is not typically enforced by the court unless it's not complied with by the defendant. So there's really, while there may ultimately be an issue of the uncooperative defendant needing an enforcement action to be taken, that happens, in my experience, in only a very small minority of cases. In most cases, defendants, once the case is final, comply with it. Also, under international comity, it's quite common, or at least not uncommon, to take a court judgment in one jurisdiction into another jurisdiction for enforcement. So foreign or non-U.S. Decisions can be brought to the U.S. courts for enforcement, and U.S. Decisions can be brought to foreign courts for enforcement. In the vast majority of cases, there'll be full faith and credit given to the court decision that was given. There may be some examination of it by the jurisdiction in which enforcement is being sought, but it's not exclusive in that sense either. So that's just my understanding of this. As far as the Hague Convention, I'm not thinking just of that, but you know, if I have a U.S. court decision and the defendant is in France, I can go to a French court and seek to have it enforced by the courts in France. That's what I'm referring to. So, Tiago, I don't know if that's a new hand or an old hand. If it's new, please go ahead.
Thank you. Tiago speaking for the record. Well, what I would request you, as Rapporteur Greg, if you may, is to put it on record what I said and on the table, the comments that I've just made, and then once we get into discussing, then we can get into more detail. But let me just try to reply to your comments in relation to your challenge to my statement that the U.S. has indeed exclusive and territorial jurisdiction. It is, I would say it's quite obvious that this is how things are. Would you contend that only the United States could carry out police operations in or within the territory of the United States? Obviously, no other country could exercise police powers, which is an expression of enforcement jurisdiction in the territory of any other country, unless that other country has consented to that exercise. Perhaps this is a practice that you have seen in the U.S. And think that the United States is in a position, for example, to carry out police operations in the territory of third countries, for example, extraordinary renditions. But obviously this is contrary to international law and is in breach of the sovereignty of other states. So as a matter of fact and law, suffice it to have a look at books discussing the problem of jurisdiction under international law, and then you will see that the territory country is the only country with the authority to exercise enforcement operations within that territory. So this is one point. And in relation to your suggestion, which is partially correct, that decisions by the courts of one country could be enforced and executed by other jurisdictions. This is true, but only to the extent that the other courts in other countries have acknowledged that the judgment passed by a foreign tribunal is enforceable within that state. And this requires another exercise of jurisdiction by the territorial state. So, for example, if Brazilian courts pass a judgment against ICANN, it's trying to compel it to shut down ICANN's operations, which are essentially carried out within the United States territory. Obviously, for that judgment to be enforceable and enforced within the United States, it would be necessary that exequatur proceedings acknowledge that Brazilian judgment as enforceable with the United States. So this is a necessary exercise of jurisdiction by the United States. And then only once the United States has given its blessing to, if you will, a foreign judgment, that judgment could be carried out within the United States. So you see, there is this exclusivity of jurisdiction which belongs to the territorial state, and I don't think you could challenge that. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiago. I think we've gone off into the off the topic of the agenda for the day, and I want to keep us on. But I disagree, and in fact, I'm not seeking to challenge anything, but I'm just offering my understanding and knowledge as a legal practitioner for 30 years, and having dealt with enforcement of foreign jurisdictions, enforcement in foreign jurisdictions, and to get to the exact issues of the extent of the review by the enforcing court is beyond us, but it is not a review ab initio, relitigating the case in the enforcing jurisdiction, except in relatively rare cases. But in any case, we've gone off topic. So, Caboose, I'll take your hand, please. Who's not hearing you? I'll also note that the analogy to police powers, I found.
Excuse me. Okay. Thank you.
Also,
I'm sorry. This mute, unmute of the judge is disturbing. Yes. Could you kindly put in the record of this meeting, whatever is that United States should not have or shall in no way have any particular unilateral power to enforce its jurisdiction because or as a result of ICANN being located in the United States. We need to have that assurance that this would not result that this unilateral supremacy power will be given to one state compared with the other states having the jurisdictions. So we should have this sort of equal footing. Otherwise, still we should come back that we may not agree that I can remain in the U.S. if that would result providing a unilateral power to the U.S. for the enforcement of jurisdiction on ICANN activities, including OFAC and so on and so forth. So that assurance should be given in your text that this would not happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I'll take up Tiago's suggestion that we move quickly through this list and just note any comments or things that people think are issues, and we'll get to whether they are issues at another time. So getting through this line, the next aspect of U.S. court jurisdiction that was brought up was that ICANN policy development and policy implementation activities which ICANN performs in the global public interest, are subject to litigation in U.S. courts. This was cited as an issue or proposed issue. The next major topic was non-interference of international actors in ICANN's core activities, and a statement that states and international organizations, all of them, should refrain from exercising concurrent jurisdiction, respecting ICANN's special role in governance model. Next, and I'd like to, I'll go much quicker, only because we have other topics. Next, that the U.S. executive, regulatory, legislative, and judicial jurisdiction over all things ICANN, and the unique solution of general immunity under the U.S. IOIA, is the next major topic, with four proposed issues under that, basically executive and regulatory powers over ICANN domain seizures, and could these apply to TLDs. U.S. legislature's unlimited power over ICANN, obviously, yeah, I'm reading these as proposed. U.S. court's judicial writ over all aspects of ICANN. Not exactly sure what's meant by judicial writ, but we'll get to that. Next is U.S. courts hearing disputes regarding community TLDs. Jorge clarified in his email overnight that he did not was not just referring to emails that to TLDs that had applied for the community designation, but any TLD that served a community. I'm not sure that that's a category that can be defined, but that is what was proposed. Next, that making sure that hearings of the IRP are location neutral. Next, that topic of non-interference of states in CCTLDs of other states. Note that, and the particular issues that were proposed here, courts overriding CCTLD delegations potentially, in rem jurisdiction of U.S. courts over CCTLD, although I believe this may have been withdrawn on the list, so I would hope to clarify that, although I believe this was brought up by Tiago, who may already have left, so we'll note for the record that we need to clarify whether the contention of in rem jurisdiction is still live. Next, that enforcement measures by domestic agencies.
Enforcement measures by domestic agencies.
To interfere. Eric, could you mute, please? Enforcement measures by domestic agencies interfere with ICANN CCTLD management. So those are the proposed issues under that topic heading. Last on the list, at California not-for-profit incorporation and headquarters location have a positive effect on ICANN accountability mechanisms and operations. Individual proposed issues under this are that questioning and attempting to limit ability of third parties to litigate against ICANN in U.S. courts undermines Workstream 1 accountability mechanisms. Also, note that Workstream 1 mechanisms take advantage of specific aspects of California law. Then questioning and attempting to looks like this next one that needs to be edited because it's missing some part of it. We'll come back to that. Last, the application of U.S. law to ICANN's action controls ICANN and subjects it to the rule of law, and that limiting this makes ICANN less accountable. So subject to cleaning up that third bullet point, those are the proposed issues under this, which we might call the positive effect of ICANN's current jurisdictional setup. So if there are any either major topics or specific issues that were completely missed by Bernie and I as we combed the list, please say so. Otherwise, I'm hopeful that we captured the major headings. So seeing nobody making comments on this, we'll leave this to the list for further discussion and move on to the next item in the agenda. And we can either take the last 15 minutes and discuss the OFAC initial recommendation, or we can discuss the issue of lack of jurisdiction clauses in ICANN contracts. Apologies that I did not leave enough time for both. Given the tenor of the discussion so far, I'd like to propose that we move to the OFAC recommendation. And we will then begin the next meeting, hopefully very close to the top, with a discussion of the issue of contractual clauses or lack thereof relating to choice of law. And Raphael, I hope you will. I apologize since this was an issue you brought up, and you are here. Caboose, I see your hand. Please go ahead.
Yes, I have no difficulty. If within the next 10 or 12 minutes, you can just review that, but not debate on that. You can explain that or describe that, that the people understand what it was put on a paper, but I think that we need more time to carefully examine that in order to avoid making the irrelevant comments that may complicate your work. So if you want to just to present it, those, you have no problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose, and thank you, Raphael, and for your remarks in the chat. If we could put up the OFAC recommendation, that would be helpful. It looks like it is coming. So here we have it. My apologies for bringing this to the list so close to this meeting overnight for participants in North and South America. But in any case, I present to you rough and ready the first draft of the OFAC-related recommendations. So I'll open the floor. I think we had a question reserved earlier from Parminder, and for any other comments you have on this document. I think Farzana also had a comment regarding discussion of solutions, which is which hopefully have been expressed here in this document as well. Caboose, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yes. If you allow me, I have some comment on the background part. Is it okay that I raise that, or I have to wait?
By the backlog, I'm not sure what you are referring to.
Background, yeah. In the background of the recommendation.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes,
you
please,
mentioned something, yeah. You mentioned something in the second paragraph, OFAC has delegated, so on so forth, you go to the many countries sanctioned. This is not the subject of our meeting. We are not dealing with OFAC in general, other than OFAC applications to DNS. So I don't think that you should go to the origin of the OFAC, all those national policies, political issues, and so on and so forth. I don't think that we should have. So I suggest we do not mention that many of these sanctions are based on the United Nations and other international mandated therefore. So I don't think that usually you as a part of the private sector never refer to the multilateral, and this time it's very specific. I don't think that this is necessary. It's valid what you said, but it's not necessary here, because you are not dealing with the general application of OFAC. You are dealing with application of OFAC in regard with the DNS, and has nothing to do with the multilateral and non-multilateral, and so on and so forth. This is a very complicated issue if you go to that sense, going that what does the United Nations resolutions on the Chapter 7, who created that, what was the discussion. This is very, very difficult. So please kindly, if possible, delete the second paragraph of the background, or at least the part relating to this international organizations, multilateral and United Nations, and so on and so forth. We don't want to give a justification of OFAC application to DNS because of the application of OFAC to the non-DNS issue. This is outside our mandate, and we don't want to discuss that. If possible, if it does not help, please kindly take it out, because it is really disturbing, at least myself. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for your suggestion, Caboose. I see a hand from David McCauley. David, please go ahead.
Thank you, Greg. It's David McCauley for the record. And if you're searching for comments on this, I would like to make one or two. I agree with you. After the plenary last night, there's not been too much time to look at it, but I've taken a quick look and would offer just a couple of comments of personal opinion on it. One is, it's a promising start. What I like about it is it deals with, as I see it, specific limited license requests rather than a general license. I think a general license would be a bad idea. I tend to agree with what Nigel Roberts has said on the list about why would we spend years creating these accountability mechanisms for ICANN simply to throw them away. But the other thing I would mention is, if there is ever a move to put the burden on ICANN to go ahead and seek licenses for applicants, I think the applicants need, and I recognize there's language about, you know, that they appear to be well qualified, but they need to have some skin in this game. And I think that that would be financial based on their ability. But free services tend to be used rather generously, and I think that would be a mistake. And I think Bernie was right earlier. ICANN can't render legal advice to third parties. It shouldn't either render legal services. So anything like this, if it ever came to be, would have to be on an as-is basis, with the option being for the applicant to go over themselves. And if they ask ICANN to do it, they simply accept it as it is. But I think they should have some skin in the game. Thank you very much, Greg.
Thank you, David. I'll note quickly response from Farzana in the chat to Caboose's suggestion that a bit of background on OFAC doesn't hurt. And I'll turn the microphone over to Parminder. Parminder, please go ahead. Parminder, we're not hearing you yet. Parminder's having an audio issue. I'll go to Farzana. Farzi, please go ahead.
Thank you, Greg. Farzana Darby speaking. Sorry, I didn't quite understand. David was saying whether getting a general OFAC license is not an option. Was he disagreeing with getting a general OFAC license? Because, well, I know that ICANN cannot just go and request one, but it can find out the way that this could be done, and a general OFAC license can, for ICANN functions, can solve a lot of the problems, and it does not really hamper the accountability mechanisms that are predicted, which are based on colonial law. So I didn't ask the question. If you can clarify, that would be great.
Thank you, Farzi. I see clarification from David and a plus one from Caboose. Just to note that there is, toward the end of the document, a specific discussion of general licenses and a suggestion for a path forward in dealing with the issue.
Yeah.
And given the fact that it is a complex process and lengthy, Claudio Lucena, if you could mute. I'm not sure who you are. Okay, thank you. So that is, in fact, proposed. That there is a movement forward Last, I'll just note that general licenses are, in fact, fairly specific, specific to classes of persons and types of transactions. So they're not blanket in that sense. In any case, enough for me. Phil Corwin, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Greg. Philip Corwin for the record. Speaking to the draft recommendations regarding seeking OFAC licenses for registrar and registry applicants, I had previously articulated the view that that should be the bias for ICANN to generally apply for such licenses, but that it should have some out if there's a particular reason that it doesn't want to be associated or otherwise seek such a license on behalf of a particular party. So I'm glad to see that the draft recommendations go in that direction by saying that ICANN should apply for an OFAC license if the party is otherwise qualified, unless it makes a determination based on well-understood criteria. But I did want to point out two things. One, on page 3, the draft recommendation regarding registrars goes on to say that ICANN, the community, should need to develop these criteria, determine how they will be applied, how the decision will be communicated. I assume that's to the community. And options for the potential registrar. But in the next sentence, it talks about letting the potential registrar appeal to the board. It seems to me that it's jumping the gun if we are going to discuss what options the registrar would have if ICANN decides not to apply. And then I would point out, while there's all this additional qualifying and explanatory language for registrars, on page 4, the recommendation for registries is much shorter and doesn't refer to any process by which the community helps develop those criteria, means of communication, and appeals process. And I was wondering if there's a reason for the lack of that specificity in the registry applicant recommendation, and if not, I think it probably should mirror the registrar recommendation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil. First, I'd like to see if people are capable of holding this meeting over for another, say, 15 or 20 minutes, maybe even 30 minutes, so that we can continue this discussion. Hopefully we can do that. I understand some people may have hard stops, but if we could, well, no reason to stop artificially at this point, even though, of course, time is not artificial. It's absolute. Subject to Einstein, whatever. I'm not a scientist. So, Phil, just to briefly answer your question, I think I'll say primarily this is these are aspects of this being a first draft. I think that the registrar sections could be much more parallel, and I think that the escalation of refusals could be fleshed out, and going directly to the board probably skips a bunch of steps. So this is very much a work in progress, especially as we get to specifics. So what I intend to do after doing some cleanup based on this call and comments on the list is to post this as a Google Doc for folks to comment on. So that can be cleaned up. So there's nothing intentional about this. I will turn to Parmeter. Looks like his audio problems have hopefully been solved. Parmeter, please go ahead.
Thank you, Greg. I would have to leave immediately, but I thought I will mention 2 points. Parmeter, for the record. One is what I asked earlier. I wanted to know whether I understand general license is for a particular sanction order and not across all future and existing orders. I wanted a clarification on that, which I hope I could get. And second is, as I mentioned, I would support making a recommendation that general license is sought, but not just a recommendation of exploring that process. That's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Parmeter. On the first point, I don't believe this was something Sam was asked or answered, although we can go back to the now cleaned up transcript of that meeting. And I don't have knowledge to answer the first question. So we'll take that back and come back to the group on that question of how general licenses work versus various sanction regimes. Caboose, please go ahead.
Yes, my comments, I think you are going quickly, doesn't matter. No problem with half an hour this time. I think on page 5, the recommendation, when you first discuss the issue or the case, is very well described. When you go to the recommendation, it's too weak. Because it is mentioned that, however, whenever the word however comes, it means try to give negative. However, I could bring awareness to this issue with register. I don't think that we are seeking for awareness. We are seeking something that could be implemented and applied and executed, but not awareness. We are not making a training for the registrars, making awareness of the registrars, and could seek various tools to encourage register. I don't think that we're looking for encouragement. Encourage, invite, request. These are not working. We have to have more stronger. So I suggest that perhaps you kindly look at the recommendation on page 5, which is very important one among others, and reword that to not be too weak and not going to encouragement, not a word like this as bring the awareness. Try to put in more constructive, positive, and objective ways. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. If you have any specific suggestions, it would be great to have them on this point. I think this goes back to the issue discussed somewhat earlier of the limits that ICANN has in actually mandating that registries or registrars do certain things, and especially with regard to whatever legal advice they're getting from their counsel. So there's a there's an issue of there that has to be dealt with and fleshed out. I think if there is a limitation in this regard, it needs to be more explicitly stated, and we can look at the limits of ICANN's powers over the activities of registrars and see how to try to deal with that in the context of this recommendation. Since the specific topic here is application of OFAC limitations by non-U.S. registrars, I think it would be very helpful to know of any specific instances in which this has occurred. I know that Farzano or the Internet Governance Project brought up terms and conditions, which seem to cite this as a possibility, but we don't know if those registrars have acted on that with any applicants. And Caboose, in your document, you were quoting from some place, but I don't know what it was, that seemed to indicate that there was knowledge of specific cases where registrants had their domains canceled by non-U.S. registrars based on OFAC concerns. But if we could get more about that, it would be helpful.
Okay. I will do that. It is from the document of 15th of January. I have quoted and I have mentioned in the beginning of the document, part of that is quoted or paraphrased is there. However, I am just dealing with this specific recommendation. I suggest that the first line, when you say that it can do directly, we delete directly. and we do not afterward refer to the ICANN. After, however, we say that the registrar in these circumstances should not take any action to exclude the registrant and so on and so forth, but not putting on the ICANN shoulder, ICANN can do this, ICANN can do that. We said that the registrar are non-US. There is no specific OFAC compliance obligations. Therefore, registrar should not exclude or ask prohibit registrant to having access to the domain name. So we should put it in that way, but not going to ICANN and say that awareness of the people or encouraging, I don't know. If I am a registrar, I always look for 100% security, and I said, okay, thank you very much, this is encouraging me, but I don't agree with that. That's that. So we would not be happy with that. There are registrars that, without any reason, they prohibit the registrant to having access because it's non-U.S. registrar and they are not the OFAC obligations unless they interpret it in the very, very, very specific way or unless they want to have a double safety vault. So I can do for double safety, but that would be very inefficient. We should put it in a way that it works. So in that case, we should be more specific and registrar shall not or should not prohibit registrant on so doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Kubus. Farzana, please go ahead.
Thank you, Greg. So the document that Kubus is referring to and has been referring to multiple times is the blog that I wrote in January. There's nothing wrong in attributing the blog to me. I wrote it. So you can call it the IGP blog or Farzana's blog, but just not like this document that was written in January. I need to get some, you know, acknowledgement for having written that blog. So that's one thing, just not to distract us from the other issues. When I looked at, in my research, when I looked at the different registrar terms and conditions and try to look at whether the non-US based ones actually have like OFAC terms, like paragraphs in their terms and conditions, I came across like two that did that. This could be simply because they copy-paste American registrar's terms and conditions. It has been seen before. They might not apply it to the registrant. They might not confiscate the OFAC, countries that are subject to OFAC domain name, but it exists in their terms and conditions with no reason whatsoever. Because as also Sam said, it was merely because of their contract with ICANN, they do not have to follow OFAC. So we have to find out the reasons, and I think instead of like finding out the reasons, we could just come up with this solution that I think Steve also like worded it and put it forward, that I think it's in the document as well, that registrars, solely because of their contract with ICANN, do not have to follow OFAC rules. That's it. So I think that would be a solution. Just we are not, so ICANN is not enforcing anything. It's not providing legal advice, but just saying that by just merely having this contract with me, you are not obliged to follow OFAC. Then we don't have to like go through like which registrars do this thing or if they confiscate domain or not. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Farzi. Do we have any other comments on that? And before I make any closing remarks, first, I would just say in direct response on the last couple of interventions, that this is definitely something that we can flesh out in this draft as it turns into a second draft. How far we can go in mandating actions by registrars, something we need to be mindful of, and it's unclear whether and why these actions might be taken. But for instance, is it possible that if a U.S.-based registry is involved, it needs to be, if it is a second-level domain under a TLD of a U.S.-based registry, that there is an issue that's separate from the registrar's relationship to ICANN? I don't know exactly. Something to be explored, perhaps. But I think generally we can try to flesh these things out. Ultimately, we will need to come to a common agreement, and I'll avoid using any terms of art with regard to how decisions are made, but we'll need to decide what this, how this reads and how far it goes, and we'll do that over the course of the very next very few weeks, obviously. That's something that needs to be made in that regard, and not to shy away from saying things we can say, but also to consider how far we can go. Caboose, please go ahead. Caboose, we're not hearing you yet.
I have to put an acknowledgement in part of the document which was quoted, but I quoted them, put them in the inverted comma in italic, and mentioned clearly that is the quotation. I have not written that, and by doing a quotations and inverted comma, but nevertheless, I should have at the end saying that acknowledgement for the part which were quoted from other documents. So that is something, but please look at the document. You see the inverted comma, you see the italic form, and you see the clear mention that this part has been quoted. And I put quote unquote. So that is the situation, but the acknowledgement formal was not put, and hereby I formally acknowledge that very invaluable and good research or work that has been done by the author of those, author or authors of those documents, and I thank them. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose, for that clarification. And it was understood that these were quoted from another source. The issue is that we need to reveal our sources and cite them so that we can know where they're coming from. So just a note in the chat, right, thanks. Author's name is Farzana, probably last name Badi. So thank you for both for clarifying that. I see no further hands. It's now 10:15, so we are in overtime. Rather than resorting to penalty kicks, I think it's time to call this meeting to a close. First, just in terms of next steps, we'll look for further comments on the list, about the list that occupied the first half of this meeting, the overall census of issues, and also for further comments on this OFAC recommendation, which will be posted as a Google Doc. Both will be Google Docs. And next week, we'll be preparing to discuss the issue of jurisdiction as expressed or not expressed in contracts and related to arbitration and the like. So I'd like to thank you all for your participation and indulgence, and please let's keep up the good work on the list and continue to respond to each other's suggestions so that we can try to determine which ones will in fact be adopted by the group. Thank you, and goodbye all. You may stop the recording. Bye.